This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Senator Shelley Moore Capito led a Senate hearing in southern West Virginia focused on the local impacts of the Clean Power Plan. Glennis Board listened in and has this report.
The Clean Air and Nuclear Safety Subcommittee meeting took place at the Chief Logan Conference Center in southern West Virginia. Capito is the subcommittee chairwoman. She was joined by Senator Joe Manchin and U.S. Congressman Evan Jenkins. The meeting addressed regulations stalled in court that put limits on each state's carbon output. Many West Virginia officials opposed them because the regulations increased stress on the coal industry. One witness, Eugene Trisco, is counsel for the United Mine Workers of America.
We cannot support rules that cause massive loss of jobs and income in already depressed rural communities like southern West Virginia. We need instead a major infusion of R&D capital, both federal and private, to lower the cost of carbon capture technologies.
At the hearing, Wayne County Commissioner and former county clerk Robert Paisley painted a picture of the tough realities southern West Virginian counties especially face, given the downturn in coal severance taxes as the coal industry has continued to decline.
Now, what do we use coal severance money for? We did give $50,000 each year to a volunteer fire department for an ambulance for our people. We have a program where we had two police cruisers replaced every year for our sheriff department. This will be the third year that we haven't been able to do that. We're going to be in critical need before long. Capital building projects, senior citizen programs, utilities, economic development, and many other worthwhile projects were part of this coal severance that we no longer have. And
then politicians also heard emotional testimony from a laid-off coal miner, Jimmy Bo Copley.
Our family's faith in God as our provider, Jehovah Jireh, has allowed us to be able to carry on with our everyday life. Our God is able to bring His people through any circumstance that they may face, and we believe that West Virginians' unwavering faith in God is what will separate us from those who mean to do us harm. While coal is not a renewable energy source, I believe that He has given us this resource to provide clean and affordable energy. I also believe that He will lead us to elect the type of people that will allow us to use this energy source until a better all-around source is available to compete with, if not eventually take its place.
Another speaker was James Van Nostrand, professor and director of the West Virginia University College of Law's Center for Energy and Sustainable Development. Extending the war on coal metaphor, he spoke about the artillery being waged against the coal industry. Van Nostrand likened cheap natural gas and other economic forces to an aircraft carrier, whereas the Clean Power Plan is a much less significant weapon.
But in terms of its impact, it's something like a shoulder-fired rocket launcher, a tool to be deployed in minor skirmishes, but it's not going to win a war.
Van Nostrand said leaders in the state should be more focused on the energy revolution that's underway, and he stressed that there is hope for economic revitalization, even if coal is probably going to play a smaller overall role in the state's economy.
It's a new game in the energy industry. It's about zero-carbon or low-carbon resources and the markets that are coming into play as a result of that. It's all about carbon allowances and carbon credits. And as West Virginia gets ready to participate in this new game, we have a zero balance in our account. We can be building those renewable projects in West Virginia. We can be investing in energy efficiency in West Virginia. And we have the resources. We have the people. We can succeed in this new game, this new energy economy.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glennis Board in Wheeling.
Charlotte Pritt's name may be familiar to some West Virginians. Pritt first ran for governor in 1992 as a Democrat, and in 1996 defeated Joe Manchin in the primary to become the party's candidate for office. Pritt is back this year on the Mountain Party's ticket as the progressive looking to make a change in the state. She spoke with Ashton Mara about the race.
You know, you consider yourself the most experienced candidate in this race for governor. So tell us about your previous political experience. Why do you consider yourself to be the most experienced person?
I have the most legislative experience than all the other candidates combined, and that's a very unusual situation. I think also my personal history, that I'm a coal miner's daughter. I grew up on Buzzard Rock Mountain north of Charleston, that we didn't have hot and cold running water, that I knew what it was like to be afraid to be sick because we didn't have the money to go to the hospital or doctor. So I understand what many West Virginians are going through right now. I've experienced financial terror and financial prosperity. And I know the joy and the terror, the despair that you feel when you don't know if you're going to be able to make the payment for the electricity. So my experience, not just the experience of the legislative experience, I served on finance committee. I know how to work with the budget. But more importantly, my years in the legislature were for working people, small businesses, the unions, the environment, women. So I feel as if these experiences that have really given me an opportunity to be the very best person to lead the state at this critical time.
You made history 20 years ago, being the first woman who was nominated to be the candidate for governor by a major party. At the time, you were a Democrat. When you were in the legislature, you were a Democrat. So tell us when and why you decided to switch to the Mountain Party.
Well, when I saw the Democratic Party leaving the people of West Virginia, when the party left the environmentalists, when the party left the unions, when the party left our small businesses, when the party turned its back on the progressives in the party, turned its back on the New Deal Democrats of FDR, when it turns its back on us, the party left us. So I went to the Mountain Party. The Mountain Party is platform is identical to Bernie Sanders' platform. And we also have in the Mountain Party, which is very interesting, I find, we have New Deal Democrats like me who are very progressive, and we have also conservative Republicans. And I thought, how is that? And independents. So I thought, how is that working? And it's working because we're issue-oriented. We have graduated from labels. So we have this interesting, wonderful connection of real people who are trying their very best to make the changes that need to be made.
So the Mountain Party's platforms, which you kind of mentioned, they include increasing public participation in government, providing equal opportunity for all citizens, protection of the environment, and the promotion of nonviolence. I'd like to talk a little bit more about the environmental stances of the party, because you've said that you would halt hydraulic fracturing for natural gas in the state, in a state that's economically reliant on the natural gas industry, on the coal industry, on these extractive industries. How do you justify your opposition to a voter who might be financially impacted by that stance?
Oh, well, I can justify that very easily. I want to say to the voter that I have a plan. It's resurrecting almost heaven. And that plan has to do with a renewable, no plan that is based on extractive industries that damage the environment or your health is really an economic plan. And so my economic development plan has three criteria. It has to be a renewable. It has to be a sustainable economy that we can do over and over again, like hemp. It has to be something that is equitable. And I want to make certain it's ecologically sound, because if we are destroying the water and the air and the land and it's inhabitable, then we are missing out on one of our greatest potentials, which is tourism. That's what we need, is a governor who's willing to step out and tell people the truth. Coal, unfortunately, is gone. I will do everything I can for those that are still there, but I want to make certain that our coal miners and our people who are going to be displaced when fossil fuel is completely zeroed out, that they have something even more wonderful to go to.
Again, that was Mountain Party candidate for Governor Charlotte Pritt speaking with Ashton Mara on this week's episode of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's political podcast Viewpoint. An extended version of that interview will be included in the latest episode released today, as well as a recap of this week's gubernatorial debate. Look for the latest episode of Viewpoint on West Virginia Public Broadcasting's website, wvpublic.org, or subscribe on iTunes. The first Jewish residents moved to Morgantown in 1879, and since the community has made quite a mark. A few years ago, the president of the Tree of Life Congregation and Synagogue in Morgantown asked now President Ed Gerson to write a history of the congregation for a time capsule. Instead, Gerson interviewed about 20 members of the Jewish community and documented their stories in a book of oral histories. The book, called Morgantown Jewish Heritage, was released this month. Ann Lee has more.
Okay, so let's first talk about the Tree of Life Congregation and Synagogue in Morgantown, which is mentioned by many of the individuals interviewed for this book. It opened its doors in 1948, and at one point it's described as Reformadox, and that's a mashup of the words Reform and Orthodox for our non-Jewish listeners. Reform is a more modern form of Judaism, while Orthodox Jews follow traditional Jewish traditions more strictly. Why did the Tree of Life decide to be Reformadox?
Oh, that's easy. it was easier. There's always that joke about the rabbi. People come up, one person says, Rabbi, you had too much Hebrew in your service tonight. I couldn't go along with it. And some said, you had too much English. It didn't mean anything to me. So you'll never resolve that.
So tell me about some of the people you talked to. I know you interviewed Belle Fields, who is 100 years old.
She had a phone that was powered by batteries, and she didn't stop talking for an hour. Well, fortunately for me, I was using, number one, a tape recorder, and number two, the batteries died in her phone after an hour.
One sentiment I noticed in the stories was this loss of Jewish identity upon moving to this region. For example, Shirley Bellman spoke about her mother's struggle to keep kosher when no kosher foods were available in grocery stores. Irwin Goldsmith didn't have a synagogue to celebrate his bar mitzvah in. In your experience, is that sense of loss common?
With my own father, I certainly can say that he was, and all those who knew him have told me, he was a mystical type of man. There was a longing, a yearning for something that had been lost in my father. And he would sometimes talk about Russia. I says, Pop, you were born in the United States. And he'd tell me these stories about Russia. And of course, the reasons for leaving Russia were not pleasant. But the memory of Russia, yes.
There were also really amazing stories in this book of connection to other communities in Morgantown. Many people spoke fondly of West Virginia University students and of coal miners. For example, Gerda Brodsky, a former storekeeper, told you how she once helped a coal miner buy a cross for his wife, which was ironic for obvious reasons. She found that delightful. And Max Levine shared a really charming anecdote about his father and one of his father's customers, which I'd like to read the first paragraph to you, and you can read the second paragraph. So here it goes. Alfred Jones was a black gentleman who lived in Westover and was a coal miner in Osage. When my father had throat cancer and had surgery, Alfred came directly from work and sat in the corner of Dad's room to make sure he was okay. This also ties in with Alfred's feelings along with his story he told after my dad died.
Whenever any of our family got off the bus in Morgantown and any of your family was going to your dad's store in Osage, you'd always go up to my mother, me, or anyone else in my family and greeted us with a hug or a handshake. Why was that important with us? Those were the years of segregation, and all of you showed us friendship without fear of someone saying something nasty. No one ever did.
How big of a factor do you think these friendships played in shaping life here?
In business, you have to recognize people. You just have to recognize people, acknowledge there's somebody else besides you. They have needs and you have needs. And there's more to it than a transaction. You know, the social transaction, a social contract. The essential factor being is the humanity. At some point we have to cross paths. Those cross points are what make human life meaningful and possible if you collaborate together. And sometimes it doesn't have to be verbal. Just sitting in the corner of a friend's hospital room.
But of course, anti-Semitism was a problem in Morgantown. The country club didn't accept Jewish members, and swastikas were sometimes graffitied on Jewish property.
I noticed that the responses to anti-Semitism were long-standing in some people. They remembered it very well, but they basically went on with their lives.
So, in the preface of this book, you make a call to action to the reader. You write, "Although I wasn't free to ignore this mitzvah or good deed, neither am I obligated to complete it. That's where you come in." I have to ask you, what does that completion look like?
You don't. You make the world a decent place for God to reside in. Mm.
You know, when I was reading this book, I kind of got the sense that the stories aren't so much about Jewish life in Morgantown. It's just about life. It's about being alive. It's about having friends and having family and going through financial struggles, things we can all relate to regardless of where we're from or who we are.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. As a community, to put all that stuff together and say, well, as a community, we didn't do quite bad, huh? Not bad at all.
That was Ed Gerson, president of the Tree of Life Congregation and author of the new book, Morgantown Jewish Heritage. The congregation will be celebrating the book's launch at the Tree of Life on October 25th.